This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Talking about this for a few days now, in light of public dissatisfaction with the judgment in Adelina Lee Sau's case, her employer, who was charged with murder, was acquitted by the High Court. Now, Human Resources Minister M. Kulasekaran responded to the case, revealing that the government has plans to amend the Employment Act 1955 in order to look after the welfare of domestic workers. It's going to be a temporary mechanism and will work more towards ensuring the welfare of maids. And this is essentially a great move that they are acknowledging that this is a problem. But the reason to do this likely goes beyond them, I guess, caring about human rights. There are other aspects to this story.
Oh, absolutely. The Indonesian newspapers are filled with stories about Malaysians abusing domestic workers.
Right.
So, really, and also conning and stealing money from male workers, but they concentrate because the stories are horrific that often turn up. And this particular story was absolutely disgusting, and don't think the Indonesians are not aware of this. They will always put it on the front page. So for Indonesia, and Indonesia is a big country, it's becoming economically very successful. It's a major partner. For Indonesians growing up, they equate Malaysians with abusers. It's a very simple equation. And why the hell not? Because if that's the only story they ever hear. And likewise, if you look at the Philippines, I mean, the Philippines has, I think it's like 20% of its GDP or something comes from repatriated money, something remarkable. So you have a lot of Filipinos overseas, but Indonesians now do not come to this country as much as they once did. And so the few that do come should not be beaten, burnt, and left outside to die. Because seriously, if you, a Malaysian, are employing a domestic worker, you are being an ambassador for Malaysia, because they have family out there dependent upon their wages, and that family will tell stories one way or the other that the boss is good or bad. And if you're constantly getting stories where Malaysians are disgustingly aggressive, then that's bad. And if you employ any foreigners, Bangladeshis, etc., you are being an ambassador to Malaysia. Yeah. You must treat them fairly.
I imagine if the tables had turned, if, let's say, Malaysia was the one that was more active in exporting domestic workers, that the same headlines that we see in Indonesia about Malaysia, it would likely be mirrored here.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So we are going to cross over now to Irene Xavier, co-founder of Persatuan Sahabat Wanita. Irene, thank you for joining us on the program. First off, Minister Kula is proposing amendments to the Employment Act to better include domestic workers. How significant would this amendment be?
The idea that he's going to make some provision for domestic workers is significant, because that's the first that we have heard of a minister trying to do this. However, we are not sure at this stage what he's really proposing. I mean, he's saying that the domestic workers will come under the Employment Act, but how specifically will they come under the Employment Act is not very clear. But he said temporarily they will come under the Employment Act. And then he says that they will work on a separate protection for domestic workers. So is he talking about another act for domestic workers? That too is not so clear. We are actually proposing a separate law for domestic workers, because the nature of their work is very specific. And if you look at the Employment Act now, it will not cover many areas of their life. So we certainly need a separate law for domestic workers.
I understand that along with other NGOs like Denaganika, you've actually drafted a domestic workers bill that would give a lot more protection to domestic workers. What are some of the key issues that this bill would address?
Okay. We have looked at things like working hours. That means instead of working a straight 8 hours, they can break it up into two or three segments of working hours. So let's say the morning is a busy time, so they could work for, say, 2 or 3 hours in the morning, and then have a break and come back again to work in the evening, something like that. Another thing that we have looked at is having a day off, a rest day. This rest day should be their time. So it's up to them whether they stay at home in the room or they go out, they should be free to go out anywhere and do anything they like without being questioned by the employer. We also looked at right to organizing for them. If they have a rest day, then trade unions and other organizations can think about how to meet these women, talk to them, and actually get them to organize to form a trade union or to form an association to speak on their interests. Another measure that we looked at is accommodation, that if they stay with the employer, then the accommodation must be clear. They should have a separate room. They should be able to lock that room. The employer doesn't have free access to that room. And when their work is over, the employer shouldn't be knocking on their door and asking them to get up and do some other work. And we have also said that domestic workers, especially migrant domestic workers, should have the choice to stay in or to stay out. Very often now, the migrant workers don't have a choice. They have to stay in the employer's house. So we said they should be given that option.
Has the ministry given any feedback to the suggestion of a separate legislation?
We have been actually asking, with this new government, we have been asking for a meeting with the MOHR on this law, and then to present to them the bill that we have drafted. This has not happened yet. We are still waiting to meet the minister.
And this isn't the first time we've heard talk about amendments to protect domestic workers, but there's never really been concrete changes made. What have been the stumbling blocks, and where does the resistance come from?
Okay, I think the biggest resistance comes from the employers because they feel that their homes are private and therefore you shouldn't have a labour officer or a trade unionist walking into the home to inspect the home and so on. So this is the mindset that people have. The other thing is that the government itself thinks that it is difficult to give the workers the protection that they need because they don't have the resources, who's going to do the inspections and so on. So it also comes then from the government. And thirdly, there is a resistance also from trade unions because generally all the unions in this country represent people in separate workspaces. It's an office or it's a factory, but it is not a home. And so our trade unions themselves do not have much experience in organizing domestic workers. They haven't actually tried very hard either to organize them. So I see these three as being very big external obstacles for domestic workers. And of course, another important obstacle would be the mindset of the workers themselves. They themselves often do not regard their work as work like any other work. They very often think that the work that they're doing is not that important, that it is different from work in a factory, for example. So that kind of mindset that the workers themselves have. So this is also an internal obstacle that needs to be addressed. And a lot of this is connected to the fact that most domestic workers are women. And domestic work is associated with women. So it is women's work in many people's minds. So this also needs to be addressed.
For any of the proposed measures to be effective, it appears that monitoring and proper procedures will have to be put in place with all stakeholders. How do you manage that monitoring when domestic workers are largely operating in a private setting?
Yeah, we have thought of two ways. One, of course, is that they should be organized. If they are organized, then their trade union or their association can educate them, can represent them with employers and with government and so on. And the other measure would be public education. Public education about domestic workers. You know, that domestic workers are workers, that they have rights, that their rights should be respected. This kind of public interest messages can be given by the ministry through the TV or radio, things like that, so that Malaysians will change their mindset about domestic workers.
Irene, thank you for your perspective. That was Irene Xavier, the co-founder of Persatuan Sahabat Wanita. And, you know, before we head to our next segment, a quick look at our messages about the matriculation program. The first one comes from Tessa, who says that I was a matriculation student. I'm grateful to the system because my family could not afford my higher education expenses. But I can't help but notice how relatively easy it was for matriculation students to score straight A's and the priority given to us to enter university. Of course, matriculation has its challenges, but are we being fair to the SDPM students or students from other education systems? There should be a unified exam system and the university intake should be based on merit. And our next message from Xia Yi, a mom of two, who says that it's a shame we can't tell our kids and future generations in Malaysia that working hard doesn't mean you can get what you deserve just because your skin colour is different.
Yeah, I mean, let's not go too far. I mean, there are still possibilities. You know, you can still do things. It's just, you know, unfortunately, there are levels of unfairness in the gateway to education is filled with unfairness.
And you can, of course, keep those messages coming. The number is 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, it's Skip Intro, where Lynn, Bahe and Ian will be talking about The Matrix. More after this on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.